Next case is 03-1808, State County, Stark County Bar Association versus Timothy Waterson. Mr. Waterson. You may begin.
May it please the court, I'm Tim Waterson. Your Honors, I've been admitted to the practice of law for about 25 years, and I love practicing law. This matter has, quite frankly, destroyed my life. I do not think that the recommended penalty of a 6-month suspension from the practice of law is warranted, and I'm going to try to go through some of the cases with you and some other issues this morning. I'd like to address the Kim Moeller case first, if I might. Before I do that, I don't know if I said this. I love practicing law, and to the extent that I did some things on these cases that were wrong, I acknowledge them, but I do not believe that the facts and the circumstances warrant the penalty recommended here. The Kim Moeller case is a personal injury case that I spent 88 hours on, and we received a verdict, unfortunately, of $1,154. It was one of these low-impact accident cases. And the medical, or the expenses on the case were about $2,000, and the medical bills were about $7,000 to $8,000. So we did not have enough money to pay the medical bills. In this case, it's about nothing more than I was holding some money in my trust account, about $228. I hadn't closed out the case. I was still paying some expenses. And the client's mother had indicated she would submit all of the medical bills, which again were like $7,000 or $8,000, to insurance, and she did that. The biggest bill was a $5,000 bill. It was submitted to insurance, and it was paid by insurance, two insurance companies. Some other bills were as well. The opinion, well, the complaint here was that I failed to pay a $200-and-some-dollar bill. That was the complaint. The opinion was that I failed to pay the medical bills and attend to them. It wasn't my responsibility to pay the medical bills because we didn't have any money from the verdict. We had, with the cost that I recovered, we had $1,700. The expenses were more than $2,000. The client's mother knew this, and she submitted the bills, and she agreed that she would. And I might add, at the hearing, I subpoenaed her to come in and testify, and she did not appear. She was in Florida. But that case, just very clearly, the opinion is it was my responsibility to pay the medical bills. It's not my responsibility to submit medical bills to a private insurer. It just isn't, that's not how personal injury cases work. So I would respectfully argue that finding is wrong in its entirety. Now, I charged 40% of the contingent fee amount on this case, which per the contract. And I spent 88 hours on the case per my fee agreement, which is not cited in the opinion. None of my time sheets are cited. I spent over 200 hours in these four cases. I spent 88 hours on this case. I charged $600 and some dollars, which was the 40% contingency fee. We engaged in extensive negotiations when the draft of this complaint was submitted to me. I had a lawyer. And we asked, is it the attorney fees you're concerned about? No, it's not the attorney fees. And I had two meetings with the gentleman to my left. It's not the attorney fees. At the end of like a two-month negotiation, yes, it's the attorney fees. So I returned the entire $689 fee to the client. The client comes into the hearing and says, I never wanted the fees. I didn't expect to get any money back. The opinion says he gets no credit for returning the attorney fees. He only returned them after he was asked to. Well, my first lawyer told me not to return them, that was a proper fee. It was a proper contingent fee. And my understanding is that there's a policy of granting credit for returning fees. So I would disagree with that part of the opinion as well, Your Honors. The opinion was that I overcharged $228 because I charged that contingent fee of $570 in costs that I returned, that I obtained. I spent like 6 hours filing three separate motions to get those costs. And quite frankly, I never even thought about it, and it was never even raised. I just charged the 40% contingent fee amount from the whole verdict. I never even looked at the contract. They never raised it. It's not in the complaint. It was never raised in all these negotiations. Don't you think I would have, if they just said, you can't charge that, I would have done that. And by the way, the Stark County Grievance Committee has a policy of calling lawyers informally and saying, you have a fee problem. Return some of this fee. Return all of this fee. Rick Nicodemo, who testified on my behalf, told me that. We do that all the time. We don't file formal complaints on these. I don't really believe that that's an improper fee. I think it's part of the verdict. I think it flows from the whole verdict. Costs, medical expenses, pain and suffering, I believe it's all part of it. Yes, you submit the costs afterwards, but I think it's part of it. In any event, I hardly think that oversight, even if I'm wrong, is a very serious transgression. And it certainly wasn't done out of any, as the opinion says, selfishness, for crying out loud. I spent 88 hours on the case. So in my opinion, with respect to the Moeller case, that entire finding is wrong. Every single paragraph except one in that opinion is wrong. I did not have a duty to pay the medical bills because I didn't have any money to, and the client's mother assumed that and in fact did it. And I did not cause this client any damage by not submitting it to her private insurance company. Her mother did. So I would respectfully request the court to frankly do something about that.
So that leaves the first count, Shirley and Charles Green. I mean,
okay.
Well, I guess we don't get into what motivates people to complain, but understand in the Mueller case, the jury disappointed everybody, and things can start rolling downhill from there. But what about the Greens?
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Or do you agree with that, the discussion and the report with respect to the Greens?
I disagree with a lot of it, Your Honor. There's no question that a page and a half of discovery should have been submitted. And we filed this case We dismissed it. We refiled it 9 months after we dismissed it. She was still treating and so forth. And she had cancer and had to stop her physical therapy, and we thought she might go back for more physical therapy. We had a deposition. I presented at the deposition additional documents. I had already presented a settlement package. I presented additional documents, and at the deposition, all the information in the page and a half of discovery was presented, and the page and a half of discovery was drafted. I should have sent it out. My mistake, my fault. Quite frankly, when we refiled the case, I was late again, but I noticed in my timesheet, I did a lot of editing and revising of it, even though she had already signed the verification page. But there was no real damage done by this. It should have been done. And it did not cause the client to settle this case against my judgment. That's just wrong. We refiled the case a year later, and we had a mediation another half a year or year after that. And the reason the client settled the case against my strong urging was, I've had cancer, I don't want to go through this anymore. Jeff Wilkoff, the mediator, kept pushing her, saying, you know, these low-impact auto accident cases are not returning verdicts. You ought to settle it. You ought to take something. That's why she settled it. She didn't know about the second discovery, and she had long since forgotten about it. In fact, she called me back after the case had been not filed for 8 months, and we talked, and she said, well, I'm over the cancer. Why don't you refile it? So she came back to me. If she was so upset and distrustful of me, she would have gone to another lawyer. It's a contingent fee case. You can pick up a PI lawyer anywhere.
Counsel.
So, Your Honor, I should have had it done.
All right.
And I was late. It was drafted. But, again, I did like 50 hours of work on this case.
Do you maintain malpractice insurance?
I do. I'm in the process of renewing it.
But you had it at all times that this was... Counsel, your case, and I'll have the same question for the other side. A lot of what is going on here, maybe all of it, seems to be neglect or just not very good lawyering on your part. We tend to try to keep malpractice from being in the discipline system, but if problems keep cropping up at some point, I mean, that's where it gets gray for us. You can understand a mistake, everybody makes mistakes, and some of them harm clients, some of them don't. But if it's a course of conduct, then it has to get into the discipline system. And what we see here are several clients that brought various complaints, and I assume the Bar Association didn't go looking for them. You're talking about low impact injury. Have you evaluated your thoughts about the practice and whether or not part of what's gotten you into this grease is you're taking cases that may have little or no merit in the first place, the clients that should have been counseled and sympathetic counseling and saying, but you know, in reality,
Judge,
you shouldn't proceed.
Kim Moeller was having MRIs done. She was having continuing pain. Shirley Green was telling me, I feel like I have a stick in my neck. I have a packet of notes. Now, I agree with you. Would I have taken Moeller or Green again? Forget it. I'm not going to kill myself and spend 80 hours anymore on these cases. The juries just won't return verdicts. But at the time, I really believed I could recover on these cases, and they are good faith cases. Those injuries were caused by those accidents. I have no question about that. But Your Honor, your point about, there's four here. Well, I'm sorry, but Pauline Strouder, a medical malpractice case, was thoroughly evaluated. She loved her doctor. Her doctor had told her, if this condition was caused by the hospital, I will tell you, won't hide it. And he sent her to the Cleveland Clinic for a test. She's treating with him in May. He sent her to the clinic in July. Statute's running in September. We're talking during that time. She understands her doctor may not recommend may not find that the hospital caused the condition, the carpal tunnel syndrome. She's acknowledging that. And it goes down to the wire. But that case was thoroughly evaluated. A test from the Cleveland Clinic showed that she had carpal tunnel in both wrists and a number of other things that made it very clear that this, you know, blood gas draw from an elbow didn't cause these conditions. And that was like the second doctor. So quite frankly, when their complaint says he waited till 4 days before the statute, that's not true. May, June, July, August, September, we're going through this and we're waiting, and my notes confirm that. So quite frankly, Your Honor, that case shouldn't have been filed. I'm sorry, but I don't think Kim Mueller should have been filed. If you have a lawyer come in here with 10 of these, you know, 10 grievances, and I've started to read your opinions a little bit lately, never read them before, never knew this system existed.
Well, now, that might not be too helpful, your cause, to acknowledge that.
Your red light is on, too, while we're talking about procedures.
All I'm saying is that with four, it makes it look a lot worse than if two had been filed. And I'm saying that I don't think four should have been filed. And I'm saying that if you had a lawyer with 10 of these versus one with one, where they're similarly situated cases, who's in more trouble? That's all I mean. I'm going to get off of Shirley Green.
You've used your time, Mr. Watterson. When the red light comes on, that means your time is expended.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Milligan.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, I'm here today representing the Stark County Bar Association. Contrary to what you may have heard today from Mr. Watterson or read in his briefs, we bear no malice. We bear no malice to Mr. Watterson. I noted at the hearing in front of the panel that we were exasperated by Mr. Watterson's conduct. And I believe the panel chair put that in the opinion. And that precisely explains what we're doing here today. What I'd like to do is just briefly note the misconduct we're here about and then talk about the aggravating circumstances that have led us to recommend and the panel to accept the recommended sanction. The four cases that were filed, one of which was dismissed by the panel, the Strader case, there are three cases left, and those three cases involve two different categories of problems. One is neglect. The one case was a personal injury case that Mr. Watterson, for reasons which he never was able to explain or articulate to the panel or to anyone else, just absolutely refused to respond to discovery, which came to the court's attention, resulted in court orders ordering him to comply with discovery requests, led to the dismissal of the case the first time on the eve of trial and its refiling 9 months later. And unbelievably, on the refiling, the same thing happened. The discovery submitted in a simple personal injury case went unanswered, despite requests from opposing counsel, despite orders of the court, leading to the brink of the dismissal of the case on the eve of trial. And only through, I think, the good-heartedness of the court did the case survive the motion to dismiss that was filed because of Mr. Watterson's dilatory conduct. Neglect is a persistent problem with Mr. Watterson in his cases, and if you look at the record in this proceeding as well, nothing was done on time. The hearings were continued four times. Mr. Watterson, for whatever reason, and again, we're exasperated about this, can't seem to get things done when they ought to be done, and it harms clients, which is why clients file grievances with the Stark County Bar Association. The second category of problems, which we've noted in two of the cases, the Moeller case and the Green case, are violations of DR 2106A, which is excessive fees. The King case is a specific violation of a precedent of this court in terms of the fee agreement, which he interpreted to allow him to take the entire settlement of $2,500, and included in that was a non-refundable retainer, which this court has frowned upon, as I know you know, and he ended up taking the entire $2,500 settlement. That arrangement, which was found by the panel to be unlawful and to constitute an excessive fee, has not prompted Mr. Watterson to return any of the fee in the King case. He has never accepted and acknowledged that wrongdoing and repaid that portion of the fee. In the Moeller case, and this is the verdict, the low verdict in a rear-end accident case, he charged a fee on the return of cost to his client, which is not traditionally done, but leaving that aside, it was entirely contrary to the written fee agreement he had with his client, which set forth a right to a fee, a contingency fee on the verdict or settlement. So,
Mr. Watterson a solo practitioner?
Yes, he is.
Okay, I didn't get that from the actual record, but with a previous public employment with various prosecutor's offices for the cities, et cetera.
That's correct.
That's my understanding. So he's a solo practitioner, and what I'm concerned with here is, the dilatory response to some very serious allegations and the investigatory process, and what can be maybe evidenced or indicated to be a lack of insight on behalf of Mr. Watterson. And I think that's what is coming through loud and clear based on what you're saying and the report here, and quite frankly, his earlier statements. And I'm wondering, to your knowledge, is there a support system for him in the community amongst, does he office share with other attorneys? Is he, maybe you can reflect on that.
I don't want to misstate anything. He had two lawyers who testified as character witnesses for him, and my recollection is that both of those lawyers are lawyers who worked with him in the prosecutor's office. I believe at times he has office shared. I am not certain if he is office sharing at this point, but I understand your concern, and we would share that concern that he does not have an adequate support system to deal with what we perceive as an ongoing problem, which is an inability to practice law effectively and in the best interest of his clients.
I don't quite understand finding on the medical fees.
Normally, you only agree to undertake medical fees if there's sufficient recovery and you try to perhaps negotiate a reduction in them or that, but when you clearly have a verdict that's well below what the fees are, which, I try a lot of cases with those type of verdicts, and it happens, and the family had medical insurance to go after, why would the panel find that was his obligation?
Yeah, and I think that is not the correct reflection of what they said, I believe. The issue was, obviously, the bills could not all be paid from the verdict because they exceeded the verdict. What happened, however, is that he agreed with them, and the panel found this, agreed with his clients that he would negotiate a reduction in those bills and attempt to compromise those bills. He had also, I believe the evidence at the hearing panel.
What was their evidence of that? Because the grandmother or the mother apparently was not available to testify. What was the evidence that he made that agreement?
Her daughter, who was the plaintiff, testified about that.
And he testified the mother made her own arrangements to pay it through insurance, and the panel apparently chose to disbelieve him?
Well, that was Mr. Watterson's point of view. That is not the client's point of view.
But we got a credibility issue. We believe one or the other. They apparently believed one or the other over the other.
I think they did, and I believe from being there and hearing the evidence, they had every reason to believe. And in fact, one of the reasons they believe that is because Mr. Watterson himself promised in a letter to one of the health care providers that they would be reimbursed from the settlement. But at the end of the day, that issue is not about whether he paid or not paid. It's about neglect, because it went 2 years without anything being done until we got a grievance about it, and we inquired, and he finally did something about the money that he'd been holding in his IOTA account that was not being used to pay any bills.
So you have basically one neglect claim and two fee claims. Can you explain why that justifies an actual suspension? Because we see a lot of cases that are a heck of a lot worse than this, where we suspend or maybe don't even suspend. Why in this case is you don't have a lot of pattern, you have one neglect and two fee. Why does that justify suspension in the opinion of your office?
Yeah. Actually, I think there are two neglect cases. There's the Green case and the Moeller, in which neglect was found, and then there are two fee cases. And that's a very fair question. And I can say to you that we are only here because Mr. Watterson has failed to respond to these problems and deal with them at every level. He has been found in contempt by this court for failing to appear at a deposition. The bar has been willing, and as he indicated, we sat down before this was even filed in an effort to try and get him to come to grips with these problems, with his fee agreements, with the fees he charged, with the neglect of these cases, and we've never been able to get him to understand the consequences of his conduct and take responsibility for them. And so we march our way through a protracted disciplinary process that is protracted because of his conduct. And at his request, he gets the hearing panel to continue one of the hearings so he can obtain a lawyer. The panel chair, because he promises that, continues the case. That lawyer enters an appearance, and the lawyer is discharged before the case is scheduled again.
Counsel, can you offer us any guidance in following up on what Justice Stratton? As if we were to agree with what's been recommended to us, it seems to me to be a tricky case to write without having those lawyers who do read the Green Book read this case and all panic, because any busy lawyer has probably most of their clients feeling that their particular agenda items are not getting dealt with as fast as they would like to have them dealt with. We can understand the degree in it, but it's a nuance that's hard to paint a word picture on. And you have clients who get bad verdicts, and there's not enough money to go around, and then they get unhappy, and if we aren't careful in how we write this case, if we go the direction you want us to, all of those dissatisfied clients are going to be waving this case at hundreds more lawyers.
Yeah, I hear your concern, and let me address that, because I think the distinction is that your average lawyer does not neglect cases like Tim Watterson neglects cases. The average lawyer does not have his clients with him and appear in front of a judge who admonishes the lawyer in front of the client for his dilatory conduct. The lawyer then proceeds to dismiss the case, refile the case, and do the same thing all over again. It is a matter of degree. Sure, I'm 2 weeks late in writing a letter, but at some point there is a degree at which the conduct can no longer be countenanced. The Bar Association has a responsibility to respond to the public. And we believe we reached that point with Mr. Watterson. I think had he understood that he was causing injury, which today I don't even think he understands today, had he accepted that, we would not be asking you to suspend him.
And again, it's all degree. I mean, I can, as you mentioned, being admonished in front of a judge, a couple of very prominent lawyers stood right out there and argued a Med-Mal case to us, who had spent some time, I believe, in jail because they didn't respond to court orders for discovery. And I think we ended up writing about it, but that was all a civil matter, not a discipline.
Right. Well, I understand there's a distinction, but I do believe that we've listed two instances where he has neglected a matter, and it's not insignificant neglect, it's significant neglect.
So, Counselor, basically, his response, once the grievance was made known to him, the complaint obviously made to the Bar Association, and then interaction with him, really plays a very large part in your presence here, is the dilatory tactics, the failure to follow through, the failure to appear, and probably the distinction to be drawn here is one of degree, but also one of response. And sure, we may have seen attorneys or all know of attorneys that may have more egregious behavior, but the insight and the response is also a component.
That's absolutely true, and I don't think we would have filed a complaint if he had responded appropriately. And when he did, then...
Can't we summarize this discussion by looking at mitigation, aggravation, sanction, and the board's opinion of page 14? It's all there, is it not?
It's
pretty well documented, at least from the board standpoint, the panel standpoint, that he's sort of the epitome of not cooperating, blaming other people, accusing other people, and so forth. If we write an opinion, if we agree with the board, we write our opinion, I guess we could say that is that that's what distinguishes this case from the more typical case, if that's the right term.
There's no question.
This is a different case than where somebody doesn't have the money to pay doctor bills. He acts as if there's no discipline system here.
Absolutely. Paragraph 49 talks about that on page 15. He has never accepted that anything he did was wrong or that there are consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Milligan. Mr. Watterson, you've used your time, if you may take 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Can I have 3 minutes?
You may have 30 seconds.
Your Honors, I met with the grievance committee twice. My lawyer, my first lawyer, Mary Sabella, started a two-month process. Deborah Coleman started a two-month process with them. In the two meetings, they said they weren't going to file these grievances, never asked for the return of fees. I wrote extensive response letters. It's just not true that I didn't cooperate. That's just factually not true. I spent a fortune on my first lawyer for over 2 months in negotiating this. And she's saying, what's the problem with this? What's the problem? The King case, they never asked me to return the fee, never once in the meetings. Let me address the contempt, if I might, briefly.
You need briefly.
Your Honor, my second lawyer, Mary Sabella, told me before I hired her, you file a motion to remove them because of a conflict. And I'm not going to get on the case until we get it continued and blah, 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 but you file it. So I filed it. It was denied the same day without even a response motion. The chair said she didn't have the authority to rule on it. It was denied. She got on the case and she scheduled another opportunity to file a motion to remove in January. Okay, I subsequently terminated her, not out of any dissatisfaction, but frankly expenses, her costs. She told me she was going to file it directly with the Supreme Court because the chair had indicated to her she wasn't going to consider it. So that's what I did. I followed her advice. I filed it directly with the Supreme Court. While this is pending, I have a motion to stay the deposition, not before a municipal court, before you, the Supreme Court of Ohio, and to remove them. So that's why I didn't appear. And another lawyer told me not to appear. He said, wait till the Supreme Court deals on this, with this. So it wasn't out of any disrespect. Frankly, I thought that acted as a stay of them doing anything. And so
It's just not true that I engaged in dilatory tactics. The continuances with the complaint, I filed a 38-page answer. Those were not done deliberately. So I would ask the court.
I think we understand your position. You've used your time. Thank you, Mr. Waterson.
Your
case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.
Thank you.